A grand dame of the New York magazine world died this week. Helen Gurley Brown made Cosmopolitan the global brand it is today. Her career took off after publishing her first book, Sex and the Single Girl, in 1962, which dispelled any doubt about a simple fact. Unmarried women like to have sex. It sold millions of copies. Joining me now is Letty Cotton Pogrebin, a writer, journalist, and founding editor of Ms. Magazine. She did publicity and advertising for Sex and the Single Girl at the time it was published. Letty, welcome to On the Media.
Thank you. Fun to be here.
What was the public reaction?
There was a lot of hoopla. I booked her on virtually all the talk shows. I sent her around to about 25 or 30 cities. It was transgressive, but she packaged it in a way where, you know, no four-letter words were spoken, and it was charming, and it was breathy and palatable somehow.
Why did she write the book?
As I remember it, she was 37 when she got married, and she had had a host of experiences as a single woman in a world in which you had to be coupled, and most people from Arkansas, where she came from, were married out of high school. And so she obviously had a lot of sex. I remember when she was writing the book, she said to me, you know, the one thing I never had was a matinee. I said, what's a matinee? She said, that's a middle-of-the-day affair, a working man and a working woman going off to a hotel in the middle of the day. I said, oh, I have a friend who's done that. And so I got my friend to contribute to her book. But that was the only thing she felt she couldn't speak authoritatively about.
This is so Mad Men.
That's true. I mean, that is exactly what our life was like, Helen's and mine. So if you think about Mad Men, you know why we had to plot and plan and strategize. Because, I mean, I recall being trapped in an elevator with a man who had a lot of power to really hurt my career. And he put his hand up my skirt. And I had to, from the 35th floor in Rockefeller Center down to the lobby, laugh him off, joke about it, be witty, be charming, because if I had made a fuss, he could have said anything. So Helen came from that. That was her context. That was mine. And we adapted. It was, you know, way before sexual harassment was illegal. There was no Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. So I guess that's why I kind of understood where she was coming from.
So you were in the vanguard of the feminist movement. In the 70s, a group of feminists organized a sit-in in Helen Gurley Brown's office because of what they thought of her retrograde vision of what a woman ought to be. How did you feel about events like that, and how did she feel about it?
Well, I was part of a sit-in at the Ladies' Home Journal when we were demanding that John McCarter step down and give the spot to a woman. And a sit-in at the New York Times demanding that more women be given book reviews and all that sort of thing. But I suppose for me it's a question of choosing your battles, and it didn't seem one that was worthy of a lot of attention. At the same time, I recognize that all those cover lines, which, you know, we found laughable, some people took seriously.
Like?
Oh, the sex secret no man can resist.
Wait, they just had that in their last issue, didn't they?
Was that in their last issue?
In every issue.
It's in every issue. She was the cutting edge on this one issue, and that is women are entitled to sexual pleasure. Now, part of that message was, and in order to get it, you have to please men, but it was reciprocal in her view. So for that era, when we were all supposed to be virgins, and I mean it, I mean, when I went back to my college reunion, all of us who had pretended to each other we were virgins admitted we weren't at the time. And Helen just outed everybody.
It's weird. You know, since her day, we've had feminism, post-feminism, third-wave feminism, lipstick feminism. Has it circled somewhere back to where she started?
Well, you know, it's a curious kind of arc, the way Helen use the female body and the way lipstick feminists or sex-confident feminists use their body is similar. But in Cosmo terms, you show your body to get men. In today's feminist body pride terms, it's you show your body because you own it, it's yours, and nobody can go near it unless you say so. So the purpose is entirely different. Maybe the impact or the appearance ends up looking the same, which is why I think your question is so apt.
For years in Cosmo, she gave advice to millions of women about sex and fashion and careers. What piece of advice do you remember her most for?
Well, I always remember, and I mean, I didn't use this advice, but I will never forget it. She always said that women should shout out when a man is having an orgasm what they want. And I said, well, like, what sort of thing? And she said, what you should really always shout is money. Because then he will always associate the ultimate in pleasure with you wanting money. She had a very, I have to say, simplistic view of life. She really did believe that women had wiles and men had needs, and you just had to put the two together and everything would work out.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Really fun talking to you about Helen, I must say.
Letty Cotton Pogrebin is a writer, journalist, and founding editor of Ms. Magazine.
I feel being a sex object is so divine and so wonderful that there is nothing better that you can be a sex object and you can also be the president of General Motors. I think men are sex objects, and it certainly doesn't slow you down that women desire you sexually. You're still able to get on with your work every day.
No, I wouldn't be able to get my work done every day if I did what Cosmo expected of me.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media was produced by Jamie York, Alex Goldman, PJ Vogt, Sara Abdurrahman, Chris Neary, and Bernie Bernstein, with more help from Ariel Stolberg and edited by Brooke. Thanks this week to WNYC's archivist, Andy Lancet. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineer this week was Andrew Dunn.
Katya Rogers is our senior producer. Ellen Horn is WNYC's senior director of national programs. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. On the Media is produced by WNYC and distributed by NPR. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.